I think a really good way, a good filter here is like, does your intuition actually predict the future? You know, like, you know, next time you make an intuition-based decision, write it down and like look back at it a month later or whenever the, you know, whatever the time horizon is. And then like, remember how you felt in that moment when you wrote that answer down, and then see how the world unfolded. And you'll very quickly be able to tell whether, you know, whether your intuition was right or not. And you can kind of do that by observing other people too.
Welcome to the AI Advantage, where modern leaders decode the future of tech. I'm Solomon Williams, founder of Solonauts. So here, it's no noise, no hype every week. Sometimes it's just me, and sometimes it's the brightest minds in tech, breaking down what it really takes to grow smarter with AI and automation. Let's dive in.
Welcome to AI Advantage. I'm your host, Solomon Williams. We have a special guest today. We have Pete Hunt. He's the CEO of Daxter Labs. So Pete, how are you today, man?
I'm doing great. How you doing, Solomon?
Good. I'm doing good, man. Yeah, so I was really excited to have this. So for the folks that really don't know much, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself and what is Daxter Labs?
I'm Pete Hunt. I'm the CEO here at Daxter. I'm an engineer originally, and I've been working on open source and dev tools for a long time. Kind of originally was kind of made a name for myself as being a co-founder of the React.js project back at Facebook back in the day, which is a very popular UI library. And now I'm the CEO at Daxter Labs, and we build basically developer tools for data and AI engineers to build and operate data pipelines. And then we build Compass, which is an AI data analyst that lives within Slack or Microsoft Teams and basically doesn't have a separate app. It's just like a very convenient little tool that lives in the tools where you already work.
So I'm curious, what kind of started through, because you already have an engineering background, just like what brought about, what was the need that you saw that, hey, this is what I wanted to fill in, and like walk us through like how that all started, man?
Yeah, so I joined Daxter Labs in 2022 as the head of engineering. And then my good friend Nick Schrock was the founder, or still is the founder, and is now the CTO. And he basically wanted, you know, by the end of my first year there, wanted some help running the company. It's a lot of work to run a company by yourself. And so I took over as CEO and he stepped into the CTO spot. Frankly, a CTO job, I think, is a little more fun. But, you know, back in, you know, I want to say it must have been a little over a year ago. It was the end of 2024. We had my son. And I took like 4 weeks off. It was a combination of Christmas break and a little bit of paternity leave. And I was playing around with some of these like AI, basically, I think it was like Claude Sonnet 3 or like one of these, whatever the first model was in Cursor, you know, back then. And I realized that like AI was helpful, but didn't really work well. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll check on this once a quarter and then we'll figure this out, you know, when I'll come back when this thing is ready to go. And what I found was like 1 quarter later, I checked in and like the entire world had changed. It was actually extremely useful for a variety of applications. Mm-hmm. And the moment that blew me away was, I think it was Q1 or Q2 of 2025. We were having trouble with forecasting. So we had this situation where we were looking green, you know, looking great all quarter, going to close out a ton of business at the end of the quarter. And then 2 weeks before the end of the quarter, a lot of deals would push into next quarter.
Oh, wow.
And it was always a different reason. It was always a different sales rep doing it, different manager or whatever. And we had a lot of trouble basically forecasting deals. And so I just got kind of like sick of the whole thing. And I exported our Salesforce pipeline as a CSV. Uh-huh. I dropped it into Cursor and I asked Cursor, hey, do a projection for next quarter. And it created this methodology based on, you know, historical performance by segment and stage and likelihood to push and all sorts of stuff like that.
Right.
It was like a way better forecast than like anything we had ever done. It was like super accurate in the end. And so that's when I was like, wow, AI for data analysis is going to be a huge thing. Yeah. And then another person on our team, he was like, hey, you know, you should take this and like put it in Slack so everybody can use it. And then that's how we went on our AI journey with Compass.
I'm curious on the cursor side, like where did it, was it already trained? Because I'm sure with people listening in right now, of Cursor being able to build out this real structured methodology, did you already have existing data within? Like what was the key point of it that made it was like, whoa.
It was shocking, man. I was on a flight and I was just bored. And I was flying from Boston to San Francisco or the other way, I don't remember. And I just literally threw it in there and I said, I'm a CEO. Try to forecast what our, you know, what's our closed won ARR going to be next quarter. And then what it ended up doing was it used a little command line tool that was installed on my computer called SQLite. And it started running SQL queries against the data. And it kind of came up with a couple of methodologies that it could use. The one that it settled on was kind of made a matrix of like, you know, revenue segment over here and deal stage over here. But it was incredibly coherent, accurate, and it gave me a bunch of different options. And it had never been trained on this problem. It didn't know anything about our business. And it just knew like we were a SaaS business and like it had all the historical sales opportunities open and closed, like what the contract sizes were, which reps were there, when it was open, when it was closed, when it was moved between stage to stage. Just based on all that information, it was able to do like a pretty good forecast.
Oh, man. So I'm sure that like I can just see you just imagine just like, this is insane, right? Like, it's like, whoa. So when you brought it to the team for the select, like where did it, when did you really start with the team getting more familiar with it? What were like the first things that you saw, man, like as a CEO, right? Of like where you started to see like real change?
So I tend to be very like aggressive on new technology, I guess. For example, like we're going to do AI assisted code generation. Let's work really hard to try to get to a point where we don't need to do code review and just like make it really fast, right? Now that's a very aggressive position relative to other people in the market. And frankly, we're not there yet. I'm not the head of engineering anymore. I'm not telling engineers what to do on a day-to-day basis exactly, but like that's where I want to get to. But with this tool, you know, a lot of people would be concerned about, oh, are the numbers going to be like incorrect? Right. What we decided to do was make it public to everybody at the company. And so everybody talks to this agent in a big public channel. Everyone sees what everyone else is doing. Everyone has access to the same data. Like we don't put like compensation data or company financials in there, but we do like, you know, you can pull another sales rep's pipeline if you really wanted to. And, you know, I don't think that most companies set up that way. But it was enormously powerful. I mean, like, Really? Yeah, because there's a couple of reasons for that. It becomes a fundamentally multiplayer experience when you're interacting with an agent in a public Slack channel. So like, if you're new to the company, you can see what I'm doing and then you can like very quickly learn how to use this product and how other people are using it.
That's
really and cool. By the way, like if you're like the CEO like me and you go down some rabbit hole that's like wrong or like not contextualized properly, the data experts can see that and like chime in and be like, hey, Pete, like this is actually like, you know, caveat, right? Like, and so it's this great like way of building, like if you've got an organization that has trust like that, it's a great way to like drive a ton of change in your organization very quickly.
I mean, like I've never thought of that, but I like how you put it in and like the multiplayer aspect of it because if I was to come on with that, it really shows you have other people. It's very collaborative, very community based. Like, mm-hmm. And so I really like that because you're able to learn by seeing and by doing, you're seeing other folks, people can bring in it. And I feel like, would you say that it helps other people, your like employees do their job better because they're seeing how everything's been provided for?
The biggest impact has definitely been on our sales org. It touches everybody, but I would say sales org number one, probably field events number two, and product number three. Our sales team is in there every day. And we're kind of divided into like new business and then existing customers. And the new business reps, they can source new deals through this thing, and they can watch each other and like figure out how to best identify, you know, new accounts with like high potential. And then our existing business reps, they're always trying to figure out, okay, like how can we deepen our relationship with this customer, have them get more value out of our core product. And so you start by just pulling basic consumption metrics, like are they using it? How much do they pay on their last invoice? That kind of thing. And then you start to see the really killer reps be like, you know, they ask you questions like, what is their tech stack? What have they been talking about on GOM calls recently? How is the support ticket volume correlated to the usage of the platform? Right. And then you start to see those techniques catch on. And it's these like kind of best practices go viral a little bit.
I've never thought, but it really brings about in helping the sales rep. You're able to kind of see through on what's going on. The AI really providing a lot of value. And then again, it's helping. It seems like it's really helping the employees really do better. It's into selling those, you know, the products and learning to more understand. I'm curious. So for you and so forth, like how do you like capture and share those like killer reps techniques to like, so the rest of the team can like replicate them and, you know, champion that?
I think that this is an unsolved problem. Okay. Like we're not the best at it. I think everybody struggles with it. And it's frankly, the way that you solve that problem is through a combination of a million things. But what we have found is that just making everybody do a big chunk of their job in public in a tool where everybody else is already in there, the learning by osmosis is a big deal. That's not to say that it replaces things like sales enablement or management or forecast calls where people kind of create a narrative around their deals and share that with the whole team. Those are obviously very important and we do all of that stuff. But I think that the biggest problem with data in the enterprise is like, it's not security. It's not managing costs. It's not like governance or computing on big data or ETL or any of the stuff that you will hear about from vendors like us. You know, it is just getting the people to use the data, you know, just getting them to actually go through the effort of backing their day-to-day job with data. Right. And so our job at Compass is not to build some sort of space age technology that is like deep neural network that's better than the Anthropic stuff to go do novel data analysis. It's about making it simple, easy to use, fun, like habit forming in a good way, you know, like all that stuff.
So like for the folks that, cause you know, I'm sure with data, you know, for folks that don't understand and it seems so broad, it's like, it's kind of like networking is like, oh, what do I do with this? Cause there's so many aspects, there's metadata, there's pieces. So from your experience with you being the engineer now, the CEO, like what have you seen that on the core pieces of data that helps people, you know, with their employees or in leadership?
I think you can break it down into, you could call it structured and unstructured data, or you could call it quantitative and qualitative data. On the quantitative side, I think that it is, you know, very much like telemetry and analytics and marketing or like funnel performance, right? Like, you know, how are we converting? You know, what's the CAC for, you know, a customer sourced from Facebook ads this week versus last week, and why did that change? You know, so going from like a quantitative like metric to like understanding why that metric is moving. I think that's one of the main things that like marketing teams use, and then our customer success and sales teams use with existing customers. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. Yeah.
And then there is the qualitative or unstructured side, which is basically like sales call recording transcripts and support tickets. And we take a look and there's a ton of gold in there, especially when you join that with the quantitative side. So like, I don't know, Databricks launched a new Lakeflow product. How many customers mentioned that in their support tickets because they want integration, right? or, you know, what's the big difference between the enterprise deals that we lose on the East Coast versus the West Coast? Like, what are the themes in the sales calls there? Right. And that can help product managers like understand what we need to build.
Yeah.
And then you can connect that to the quantitative data in the CRM, the marketing funnel, and like be like, you know, are our discovery calls different? That's an unstructured question based on the marketing channel which the customer came in from, Facebook ads, et cetera, which is a quantitative thing. And so being able to like stitch all that stuff together is like super cool.
Right.
You could get a data analyst to do that for you. And in fact, if you want a 100% accurate answer 100% of the time, you probably should do that. But a lot of times it's like you've got this shower thought where you're like, I wonder if the East Coast companies care more about security and governance and the West Coast companies care more about time to market. And like you can test that hypothesis in like 30 seconds.
Like, and I'm sure like, cause you're coming through on Pete on exactly on the transition from the engineering to now your CEO. So now you have to, this architecture mind that you have and it's very modular based. And I'm sure that was a switch for you, right? To kind of be more client facing, having to deal with different aspects of it, of what you mentioned just now. I'm listening to you, what you're saying. I'm breaking down East Coast, West Coast and all these different pieces. How has that been an adjustment for you from that side?
Understanding, especially in go-to-market, what's an art versus a science, I think is important. I think that selling is a mix of both. But there is a part, kind of an organization level, there's an engineering part of that. And basically until we started being ruthless about forecasting and ruthless about CRM cleanliness and statistical forecasting as opposed to the art of forecasting where a rep puts a deal and commit based on however they want to, you know, make that determination. Once we got ruthless about doing data-driven forecasts, that was super important. However, there's a ton of art and all the alpha is in the art of selling, like talking to the sales reps that just have a really facile understanding of the product and what the customers are trying to do and them saying like, listen, I can't quantify this. I have no data to back this up, but I feel like we need to do this or this is a big problem. And being able to like join that intuition with the data is, I think, a very, very important thing. And I think a lot of people I think a common thing is like people actually over-index on data. Mm. And you have to, I almost think it's like if you've hired well, you want to basically use the data as a check on the intuition. Make sure that you're not going down a bad path by just relying on intuition. And like, that's why we built Compass, right? Is so like, we can be in the customer weekly meeting and be like, oh, we got this feeling that we need to build this integration. Well, let's like quickly check it against the sales call transcripts and make sure that we're like not missing something here. Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense. I'm so like with that on Compass side, like how do you operationalize like that balance between the intuition? Of course, data is everything now. I feel like even with, if you kind of really break it down, I feel like now that I've kind of been more on even myself on this founder to CEO journey of like, everything is data around the people that you're interacting with, like getting to know like each piece of your lead and everything else. It puts apart, you really are able to put together now in this age that we're in to really get a good profile of people of the data. So my question is, how do you balance that intuition side of just kind of knowing from your sales reps and from the experience and the data, if that makes sense?
I think a really good way, a good filter here is like, does your intuition actually predict the future? You know, like, you know, next time you make an intuition-based decision, write it down, then like look back at it a month later or whenever the, you know, whatever the time horizon is. And then like, remember how you felt in that moment when you wrote that answer down and then see how the world unfolded. And you'll very quickly be able to tell whether your intuition was right or not. And you can kind of do that by observing other people too. And you know, there have been situations where like, I'll be like, I know that I have not doubled down hard enough on this innovation-based decision. Mm-hmm. And sometimes your intuition's wrong, right? And like, you know, it's a jagged frontier. Like your intuition on some stuff's going to be great and your intuition on other stuff's going to be crap. Like my intuition on sales is super good. My intuition on engineering and like technical taste is super good. My intuition on marketing is like terrible. Like I have this like, I'm always wrong about what channel is going to deliver. You know, we place a bunch of different bets on different channels and I'm like always wrong about which one's going to go well.
So it's really the channel, but you're still keeping to the core of it, the saying. So it is still, would you say like the intuition is kind of spot on a little bit that the channel may differ, but the core of it is the same, would you say?
Yeah, I just think with marketing, it's a lot. It's very much a place where you like come up with a lot of, I mean, performance marketing is a little different, but like a lot of the most cost-effective marketing you can do, highest efficiency marketing you can do is like a bunch of humans in a room kicking around fun ideas. And then, and that is like a totally unscientific process in my opinion. But then applying a scientific measurement afterwards, like, okay, did this work? Like good example is like, we wrote a children's book about data engineering.
Really?
What's one of the big problems for our business? Big problem in our business is that developers love it. They don't know how to talk to the leadership and sell the deal, right? But when they get a children's book, two copies of the children's book from the conference, they give one to their head of data that like, you know, gets the brand right in front of the economic buyer, right? And it's not something that the other vendors are doing. And so it turns out that like, you know, we were tracking like who stopped by the booths with the books and those sales processes do show they're materially stronger than the ones without it.
Because I think you kind of heard it. If you can't explain it to a 5-year-old, that you're not really doing well.
Yeah, yeah.
I really like that because I think where it comes in, I have a habit of it too, of where you just want to over explain it and then it just gets down to the simplistic form, right? And I think that is the key part. I would assume that would be the case because of the children's book, because you're able to break it down so simple, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely part of it. I think brand is a big part of it. And you know, to some extent, you don't know, but it's also just different and novel, you know?
No, I mean, I really like you. That is a very unique, I've never thought of bringing about data engineering, cloud architecture, like all of that to a children, like explaining it. If you could explain it in a children's novel, then you are go time. You can really break it down. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, again, it's like my intuition on that. Like I wasn't like, oh yeah, this is going to be amazing. Like it was like, okay, this was like this is a fun idea.
Yeah.
And then that worked out great. We had another ebook that I was very negative on originally, but we had some really talented people that really wanted to do it and we trust our people and they were totally right. And that was our best performing, you know, marketing asset of like 2025 or whatever. And then, you know, things that I thought would be really good, like we had a bunch of very, very successful technical blog posts that drove tons and tons and tons of really, really high quality organic search traffic to our site.
Yeah.
Like they would sign up for trials of our product and then they wouldn't actually use the product. And so that was something that I thought was going to be really great. And in some respects it worked, but like in others it didn't. And so, you know, I'm glad we measure.
What do you think your gut or your intuition is kind of telling you what might have been the point of, obviously they got to a certain point of where they downloaded. What do you think was the key?
Yeah, I think that it's very important to be aware of your own cognitive biases and to, because you've got your like tiny little part of your brain that's like logical and then you've got the rest of your brain, which is like, it's very emotional. It's very vibes based or whatever. And I think it's very important for that logical part of your brain to be like, you know, very critical of like what your cognitive biases are and what you gravitate towards. Like, and the way that I the like funny version of this that I like to say is I have this rule called the no fun rule, which is like, if something sounds like fun, like you probably shouldn't do it. And it's not exactly the truth, but like that set of technical blog posts, for example, I thought it would be really interesting. I thought it was very useful. I thought it was very interesting. I was jazzed to read them.
Yeah.
And the fact is like, just because it was interesting and useful doesn't mean it's going to drive trial conversions.
Right.
And conversion to paid customers. And so, you know, I think that looking back, that the series of blog posts probably ended up being positive for domain reputation and search traffic and stuff like that. But really was not like a worthy of a big bet. Right. That makes sense.
No, it makes a lot of sense. You know, kind of bringing it around to seeing your side of it feed on the industry trends. I kind of kept this in mind at the beginning of the call to ask you, but there's obviously a lot of hype around the AI, of course, Claude coming out with its Mythos, but in terms of, because everything is based off of your data lake, everything's based off the cloud, like what you have, your structured, your unstructured. What for you, Pete, is like, what major shifts are you really seeing right now? And just from your talks with current customers and maybe some conceptions that they see right now in data infrastructure and AI adoption, like how do you separate like what is real from the marketing of the good LLMs and then what's really business impact? Does that make sense?
The reason I say it that way is it's just there's so much going on and the world's moving so much faster than it ever has. And it's hard to answer that question. And what I will say is, where are we seeing AI have a business impact? So I told you that story about Cursor and the data analysis. Like to me, that was the first like, oh my God, business impact directly from AI, did a thing that we couldn't do before. And that's why we built a product in that category, because we had conviction around that. But beyond just that, I think that we are seeing ubiquitous adoption of tools like Claude Code, Cursor, Codex, Pi, OpenCode, these like coding agents that write code, you know, accelerate software developers. And what I think is interesting is that there's two camps of customers that use these products. The first, see marginal improvements. So they say, oh, you know, our team's got like 15% faster or, you know, maybe 50% faster. And then for the second category, they're like, our team's got 10x faster. And we actually have teams at Dagster where like some are 10x faster and some are like 15% really? Faster.
Yeah.
I think that there's one of the things that people are starting to figure out right now is that the AI agents can, to a certain degree, verify their own work.
Mm-hmm.
And so when basically the best agentic engineers right now set up like a test harness and they say like, listen, like here are the criteria for the thing we have to build. And here's how we're going to verify that it passes those criteria. And then they just let the AI agent rip and they say, listen, just like pass this test and like, we're good. And I think the way that the kind of like slower, more marginal gains are is like, the human does that verification every time.
Yeah, and it's even for us at Solinox, man, that we were kind of building out this product on like utilizing for migrations, because we're seeing a lot of companies now doing this repatriation where they're wanting to kind of move not fully to the cloud, but more of a hybrid approach to keep some of their data on prem. So we had to utilize some of Claude Coding and building out like an assessment, more of a matrix to see like what's their on-prem, you know, what are the SKUs, and really in conjunction with, you know, Azure, Microsoft has their own, but really putting together like what is the best practice based off of the So it's been real. It's really getting there on providing that, you know?
Yeah. We hear a lot about tools like Claude Cowork as well. Not seeing success with it as much, but they're pushing that pretty hard.
Yeah, I think so far it's been like really Claude Code has really been the really key part. We've seen a huge improvement just in the last, I would say, but since like Super Bowl or before, like you've really seen an uptick in production level and connectors of having it, of the LLMs being connecting to different outside, you know, APIs, and you know, you're having that MCP protocol of what they have it for to be able to connect. So you know, with that, I'm curious, man, on the, with Daxter Labs and so forth, what have you really seen from your customers that really seen like the big impacts that they've seen on that data orchestration? Has it been just the dashboards and them seeing like all of the pieces? Where have they really seen a tremendous value with that?
Yeah, you know, I think from the Compass side, you know, they're making more data-driven decisions faster. Executives are able to have conversations that are grounded in reality, not what was filtered up to them. Marketers are making way fewer vibes-based decisions and more data-driven decisions. And then like sales reps are bothering rev ops a lot less because they have data at their fingertips. From a data orchestration perspective, you know, like there's a lot of, you know, companies like live and die based on their data at this point. And, you know, reducing data downtime and improving data agility is huge. And so we see our customers basically having their cake and eating it too. So they're able to ship more data assets while also having better uptime, which normally you would think as you ship faster, you have more problems, but we're pushing the frontier out.
So what's your goal for Daxter, for Compass in like the next 6 months to a year? What would you like to kind of see from it? And what would you guys have boiling up?
Yeah, well, the stack is changing a lot. And we want to make sure that we basically help our customers and our buyer personas navigate that change. And this is both like our, you know, customer accounts, like how does a company adjust to the AI era? And also, how does an individual data practitioner, data analyst, data scientist, data engineer, how do they think about their career and how do they think about their impact to the organization in this era where AI is doing lots of stuff? And, you know, our job is to kind of help those folks navigate that and figure it out. So, I think that from a product perspective, I could rattle off a bunch of features, but that's the broad theme.
I think it's really been this change of how do you really adopt AI really in from a change management perspective on a change org of really getting it. Like your multiplayer approach of it, of how you brought the teams is so unique because you really learn by seeing what others are and it makes you think of, it's that intuition that you're thinking like, oh, I never thought of that. How about if I do this way, right? So I really like how it brings that community, but you're still able to be a little bit different in your approach, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Totally right.
Yeah. So, I mean, now this has been great. So with that, like if you had that magic wand, like if having a magic wand, if you could have AI do whatever it is, whether it is for the business side or for the personal, like what would you like to see in the next few years or even, you know, 10 years or whatever, would you like to see AI?
Certainly, I would like to see advances in medical care. I think that, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty and fear around AI, and I share some of that. But there's also a ton of potential. Like we might like live in the Star Trek universe, like in our lifetimes.
Right, I know, it's insane.
And so, I would really hope that, you know, we start to see the benefits to the consumer in the form of, you know, higher quality and cheaper healthcare, maybe, you know, things that would have been considered miracles, you know, 5 years ago. And, you know, just a being able to take advantage of the consumer surplus that's being promised to us before, you know, any sort of like restructuring of the jobs-based economy happens.
Yeah.
You know, if it happens, right. So that's all.
Just like on just really where is you seeing the data on the side of what works and what people have before you even implement AI? Like how are people doing their job? Like how are people utilizing either, you know, Confluent, whether their knowledge bases, how does it work? And then we're adding automation or AI into it. How does this piece in? So to your point, like the structured or unstructured is really key on that. I think that's the
key. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think with AI, we've got the ability to, you know, query data in tons of different forms and combine it and remix it in ways that that would have been much more expensive in the past.
Pete, it was great having you on the call. For those that have been listening on the call, they want to try out Daxter and they want to learn more either in your journey yourself as you're going through as being on the leadership side or with the products that actually has, where can they learn more about it?
Yeah. We're at Daxter.io. And then we have the Compass product is at DaxterCompass.com. And I post on LinkedIn all the time. So I'm just Pete Hunt.
All right. Well, Pete, thank you so much for coming in. For everyone listening in, it was great. Thank you for tuning in and listening to the whole conversation. We'll make sure to have Pete's info with Compass and for Daxter Labs, like down and below, so you can be able to check out, see which product kind of really fits for you. Then we'll catch you on the next episode. Be sure to like and subscribe on that. Take care, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to the AI Advantage. If this episode sparked an idea, share it with your network. Subscribe for more no-fluff conversations on how smart tech drives real outcomes. And if you're ready to future-proof your business, let's connect at solonox.net.